Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. Coming up, Eric Reed is back in the NFL. Jimbo Fisher lost his mind up in here. And we'll look back on Outkast Equemini after 20 years. But first... Earl Thomas, he has been a story all year long because no one has been less pleased about showing up to work to make $8.5 million than Earl Thomas. Now, I'm not saying that like one of those people that's like Earl Thomas need to be satisfied with that $8.5 million that he is making. No, I understand why it is that he is not satisfied. However, I can't think of anybody who actually showed up and still was as salty as Earl Thomas clearly was at every turn once he came back to play for Seattle. Now, it's also worth noting his saltiness did not affect his play. He had been very good through this point in the year, but the Seahawks went, they played a game at Arizona, which has been a bit of a house of horrors for them, like on physical type stuff. Cam Chancellor's career ended in Arizona. Richard Sherman, his time in Seattle ended in Arizona. I believe Earl Thomas also broke that leg down there in Arizona. That has been a place where bad things have happened for the Seahawks. And then Earl Thomas goes out there and he breaks his leg. And of course, you know what happened after that. He started riding on the cart and then he, flipped a bird to the, sideline. Gabe, have you ever flipped a bird at your boss?
I have not.
The only time I ever came close to doing something like that, I once had a phone call after I got fired, and I kind of had to talk through the phone call. And I guess I didn't have to talk through the phone call. I think they were just letting me vent. But it was like my boss who I did not like and his boss who I did like. And so I'm talking to his boss, and then the guy I didn't like will pop up, but they've already told me that I was getting fired. And I'm like, I will let you know when I am talking to you. You know, like it had to be that. I was like, yo, I'm not talking to you right now. Whoo, boy. Anyway, I ain't never been at a point where I wanted to flip the bird. Earl Thomas basically, me and my brother were talking about this. Earl Thomas hit him with the half-baked. F you, F you, F you, you're cool, F you, I'm out.
And it was almost like a little bit to the side, too. Mm-hmm. He was trying to like get like a wave there.
The side is crucial.
Everybody, yes.
The side is crucial. Like the straight ahead bird flip, I don't know. There is a difference between the one to the side and the one that comes straight ahead. But if you do the one that comes straight ahead, but you know you do it where you put your other arm over the top, you know what I'm talking about? Like that implies a greater level of, right? Like yeah. That is like at the top of the bird flipping pyramid. Earl gave him the sideways, like, man, whatever. You know, like, I ain't even tripping, man. Bump y'all. That's what he gave him.
We had
the question on High Noon where they were like, who do you think that bird was intended for? I'm like, who on the sideline could that bird have been intended for? Ain't nobody, there's only one dude on that sideline that didn't give Earl Thomas his money. And Earl Thomas wanted his money. There's only one dude on the sideline that did not give Earl Thomas his money, and that person was Pete Carroll. And therefore, Pete Carroll was a dude that wound up getting the bird. That's what it was. And I also will give Pete Carroll a measure of credit that he took it in stride. Like, he did not take it personally, though it was fairly personal. He said, he was like, look, man, this dude has suffered the same injury before. He knows what it is, what he's going through, and everything else. He gets to let off a certain measure of frustration. Like, I appreciated the fact that Pete Carroll didn't look at that as a time that he needed to stand up in the name of his pride.
Could he have, you know, could he have been like, you know what, F Earl?
Yes, he could. Yes, he could. You do not have to tolerate people giving you the bird, right? Like if Pete decided he wanted to rail on him, I'm not really so big on tolerating people giving me the bird. I remember that time when I was a teenager, I gave my brother the bird. I didn't realize what a intense sort of thing that was for adults. Like, oh, my bad. We do this at school all the time. Why do you want to fight me? You're twice my size. Oh, I violated a matter of principle. I didn't realize it. My bad. So yeah, if Pete decided that he didn't want to have none of that nonsense, he was not required to have any of that nonsense. But man, this is the game, you know, and I almost want to be like, I think there were a lot of people after this happened with Earl Thomas. You saw a lot of this on the internet where people are making the argument of, this is why I don't have a problem with players holding out, right? Like trying to say like, now do you understand why it is that guys hold out? And I'm looking at them like, yo, y'all don't seem to understand. This is not a matter of people not getting why dudes holding out. They just don't like the idea of them holding out. Like, anybody that was in a situation of working a job that had the risk that's involved in football, they'd fully understand why it is that somebody would make one of those plays. They get it. If they were in that, they would 100% get it. This is not a matter of people not being cognitively capable of grasping what the issue is. No. People don't like labor. Like, generally in this country, the attitude is against labor. I don't think there's any way that you can say it that is other than that. People are generally against labor, and they're really against labor in sports because them dudes are rich, and they're really against labor in the sports with all the black dudes in it. Like, I give you something to consider on this. 2011, when the NFL had its lockout, and there was the lawsuit, I think it was the decertification lawsuit, but it was the lawsuit nonetheless. First three names on that lawsuit were Brady, Manning, and Breeze, because the Players Association is like, look, man, we need to get these white dudes' names on this, and maybe that'll turn the tenor of this. And so they got them on there. Now, Drew Breeze of those guys is the only one that's ever been like a for real, like, union guy. But, you know, that's been Drew Breeze. Man, my understanding is they were trying to come up, you know, with the statements to put out and how they were going to phrase it around the fact they were up there. Man, those quarterbacks were, whoo, they were tiptoeing through the raindrops on that one. Tiptoeing through the raindrops on that one because they understood the people don't like the labor. And it wasn't really a matter of these cats being like, hey, it's us. You like us. Nah, you was going to get lumped in with all them other dudes that you over here fighting for that are greedy and ungrateful and don't want their money. You know, all, nah, man. Like, this is the state of affairs that we wind up with. The thing is, so like for a cat like Earl Thomas, I look at Earl and Earl said that $8.5 million was too much money for him to walk away from. And I get that to a degree, but I also don't. And this is what I mean by that. I figure that if you've got your contract and you got to budget your money out on the contract, no matter who you are, you got to look at the last year of that contract as though that money's never going to come. Right? Like the likelihood of you getting that money, you have to look at that money like it's never going to come. And so, yeah, $8.5 million is a lot of money, but it seems pretty clear that Earl Thomas doesn't think $8.5 million is enough money to play 1 year of football, at least without some level of assurance of what is going to come for the back end. I'm wondering at what point one of these dudes winds up saying, you know what, I retire. Like with Le'Veon Bell and the way that Le'Veon Bell has played it, I'm like, yo, you talking this like you willing to retire. Are you willing to retire? Like, are you willing to walk away? Because I get it. The money is there, and I guess Earl is going to ultimately get that money. Like, he's going to get his $8.5 million. There's no way around it, man. But sometimes you just got to be like, yo, I'm not coming. That's not going to happen. And I feel like if Earl had done that with Seattle, Earl might have gotten his money. And the reason I think that Earl might have gotten his money is they need him. This Legion of Boom era, I think something that gets lost in this is the best player of it has been Earl Thomas. The most important player of it has been Earl Thomas. Like, we've seen when Earl doesn't play, like Richard Sherman didn't play, one of those quarters didn't play, they switched all those positions out. The changes weren't that significant. When Earl didn't play, all of a sudden they give it up 300 yards to everybody. Everybody. He's the guy that mattered more than anything else. I can make an argument that Earl Thomas is the most important player in the history of the Seattle Seahawks, given his role in them winning a championship, right? Given he was central to the group of players that was the personality of the team during that run. I can make that argument. Man, if they'd gone out there and gotten lit on fire because Earl wasn't there, you telling me they wouldn't have had to come down and give him his money? Because I think they would have had to come down there and they would have had to give him his money. The cats ain't necessarily built to not play. Like, where I give props to Le'Veon Bell in the situation he's in is he made the call, man. I'm just not going to play. Although, Gabe, you've seen that Le'Veon Bell says he's coming back.
Oh, my God. Like, literally a day after this Earl Thomas injury, and he was like, I'm cool with being the martyr for y'all. Like, you know, I'm in it to win it here.
Yes,
for everybody.
But did you see when he said he was coming back? He's coming back during the bye week. What people have to remember about the way that NFL salaries are paid, you don't get 16 checks. You get 17 checks because you get paid during the bye week. Le'Veon Bell came back to get a check without working. If that ain't finesse, I don't know what is. It's like, okay, yeah, that week. Oh, yeah, I'll take that. That sounds like that was his plan the whole way. I'm going to make sure I get that free check.
It's kind of like oh, everybody's away on like a work business trip or something like that.
Yes.
And somehow, you know, it didn't work out for you because you had a doctor's appointment like that. So, all right, I'm just going to work from the office this week.
Yes.
But you're the only person in the office.
Yes.
So it's like, I'm going to come in, get paid, and, oh, you know, if I take a half day, no one will know because no one's here.
Yes. That's it. And look, I mean, he did an interview with our man, Jeremy Fowler, and it was pointed, he's like, look, man, I wasn't going to do 400 touches. Period. I was not going to do it. I just didn't think it was right for me to take on that level of workload without the payoff. And the key, the difference between Le'Veon Bell and Earl Thomas is Earl Thomas had a contract. Le'Veon Bell did not. Like, I don't think people realize that. He does not have a contract. He doesn't have a contract until he signs it. He has made no agreement with the Steelers. And now he's going to go ahead and he's going to sign that contract and he'll come back and play. And oh, by the way, they appear to need him greatly. It appears that they really, really do need him to come out there and play. So now he's going to come back. Let me tell you, they're going to boo him at first. Let him go out there and get a buck 50. All them boos going to go away. They were like, James Conner, you know, it's cool. You went to college here. You know, you don't overcome some things, but, where the man at? Yes, you, Mr. Cancer Survivor, step to the side so this ingrate can come out here and try to get us to the Super Bowl.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be no disrespect, James Conner. We appreciate everything you done, did, and everything else. But nah, player, we got to get the man up in here. But this is the game, man. This is it. These cats trade on their bodies, right? And they reach a point of where they're getting close to their expiration date. Like, I look at Le'Veon Bell and Earl Thomas as being guys in very similar situations where Earl Thomas is a safety who is in his ninth season. And Le'Veon Bell, I think, is 26 going on 27 playing at running back. This is the last chance to score. This is it. Now, Earl, in a way, got off not easy, but if you're going to suffer an injury like he suffered, you want it to be a broken bone. You don't want it to be like muscles and ligaments and stuff like that. The bone injuries, they are going to heal more easily. They're going to heal better. So, like, he's there. But for Le'Veon Bell, man, big injury happened here. This could all be the end. And if you decide that you're trying to get you one last score, you got to get it. Because you know who was trying to get one last score? The Seattle Seahawks off of Earl Thomas at $8.5 million. You know who was trying to get one more score? The Pittsburgh Steelers off the franchise tag for Le'Veon Bell. Everybody's trying to get it, man. And at some point, I just hope that people are able, at least the ones that are actually confused, because I don't think that many of them really are, but the people who are actually confused, dude, you got to appreciate that this the game, this capitalism, this the way it works. And these dudes actually have some measure of leverage that allows them to push back. Most of us are not in a position where we are able to push back. Those cats are able to push back. And I just don't understand how it is that you're not rooting for the people who are able to push back, but instead are rooting for the people that push you around all the time. But again, that's not just football. That's all over. Y'all be rooting against teachers. Teachers. Right? Like, I ain't really trying to go, like, political on you because, you know, they don't like that around here. But teachers. Like, you can't separate the fact that y'all be rooting against teachers in labor disputes from the fact that y'all got all this beef with football players. That's why I'm looking at it. We're like, yo, man, you can't go out. You know, now you guys need to understand why people hold out. No, they got it. They got it in the first round, man. They just decided who it is that they are going to root against. And it is whoever's working. They will instead root for their bosses.
I feel like we are talking about this every week, you know, with Earl Thomas and Le'Veon Bell, but I actually enjoy it because this type of player power that we see them exerting, you don't really see that as much in the NFL, but you see it in the NBA. I mean, we see it with LeBron. We see it with Jimmy Butler. These guys, you know, trying to force the situation and get to go where they want to go.
Yeah. The NBA has made peace with the power that great players have. They just have. They figured out that this is what it is, and they've made peace with that. The NFL never has. Remember, legendarily, I think it was the 1987 strike, where Tex Schramm, general manager of the Cowboys, told the players there, you're the cattle, and we're the ranchers. Said it to their faces, right? Like, that is the way that football people look at the players. When Jerry Jones talked about these new rules and how he doesn't like them, he's like, basically, we paid them a lot of money to get the hell knocked out of them, so go ahead and let people knock the hell out of them. They don't view this like they're dealing basically with people. The NBA, those guys require that they be dealt with like they are people. I just ask the people out there, why don't you treat the people like they're people? All right. Eric Reed is now a member of the Carolina Panthers. Eric Reed, former safety with the San Francisco 49ers, knelt with Colin Kaepernick, all that stuff. Now he has a job with the Carolina Panthers, which, by the way, is your friendly reminder that Jerry Richardson no longer owns the Carolina Panthers. Can you imagine that? If they had come to Mr. and be like, Mr., we want to sign this Eric Reed dude. Like, you just have to hope that Mr. is old and hadn't been keeping up on who all the other dudes were. Well, tell me more about him. Oh, yeah. Just try to keep it brief and then go from there.
Maybe he fell asleep.
Yes.
And they were asking him, and he's like,
No. No lie, man. I once went to a breakfast at the National Association of Black Journalists Convention, and for some reason, Jerry Richardson was there, and that dude passed out at the table.
Oh, boy.
No lie.
Maybe we need to go down this road. For some reason, Jerry Richardson was there.
No, he was there because they were honoring some, PR guy, and I guess he had worked for the Panthers before. And so they brought him in there. He's like the godfather of the black PR people in the NFL or something like that. And I just don't know. Like, they actually got Jerry Richardson to show up. By the way, never forget Jerry Richardson, a.k.a. White Jerome. You know his name is Jerome?
Yeah,
Jerome from Hardee's. Because, you know, Jerry Richardson used to work at Hardee's. I mean, he owned Hardee's, but he worked at Hardee's. But one thing I want to say, by the way, before I forget with Eric Reed, let us not forget that it is ridiculous that he did not get a job until he did. The Carolina Panthers are not to be given credit for the fact that they signed him at the time that they did, because the Carolina Panthers knew that they needed some help in safety, and they knew that there was a good safety that was out there, and they did not take him. So I'm looking at these stats my man Florida James came up with. With Eric Reed on the field, opponents against the 49ers had a QBR 58.8. With him off the field, 70.4. With him off the field, opponents' completion percentages went up 7%. With him off the field, their yards per attempt went up a yard and a half, which is huge. Okay? The 49ers right now are 26th in the league in opponent QBR at 62.9. This guy could play. Like, the team that had him could have used him also, and they decided to let him go. Oh, by the way, the team that had him could probably use a quarterback right now, but they decided to let that guy go too.
Oh, my God.
That's right. It's your team.
Oh, boy.
I forgot.
We had some Pro Bowlers on the team. We had some Pro Bowlers. Oh, my God. They were like, the 49ers, they showed legitimate interest. Like, my man Jim Trotter tweeted that out. And I was like, for real now?
For a guy that actually played for you?
Yeah, for a guy that we had in-house who wanted to stay.
Yes.
He wanted to stay with the 49ers, and you just let him go.
Yes, and then decide you're going to try to get him back.
Yeah.
Right?
What?
Like, what are you talking about? Like, what in the world is this?
Oh, he's not are we gonna make the same argument that we did with Colin? He's not a scheme fit.
Right.
You know what? You make the schemes around the best players, don't you?
I mean, also, I've seen Kyle Shanahan make it work with Robert Griffin. Right? Like, he's just made the decision that I wanna run my offense. Sure, I'll trot CJ Beathard out here.
Yeah, cause he's our guy.
Yeah. What are you talking about, right? So, Reed has showed up with the Panthers, and this is a good player, and I'm not giving you credit for hiring someone qualified. I don't think that this required a major level of courage, because have you seen a PR backlash, Gabe? Because I haven't.
I haven't, no.
It wasn't going to be for Eric Reed, and I mean, not in this way. And look, Charlotte and that surrounding area is interesting. One thing for you to keep in mind, if you don't know very much about like what the Carolina Panthers are, what they're doing, there's a reason why they're called the Carolina Panthers, because Jerry also wanted to always make sure that the state of South Carolina knew that they were involved in this. And I don't know what your perceptions are of the state of North Carolina, but North Carolina has historically been viewed as being more of a progressive place than South Carolina is. But they absolutely speak to South Carolina also. That's why. And me and Shannon used to talk about this all the time, and people thought we were making this up. The Derek Anderson hive behind Cam Newton was there until Derek Anderson was gone. Like, there were people, a lot of people, who were like, man, I'm telling you, I think they'd be better off if they brought in Derek Anderson. Like, so I'm not pretending as though the Panthers fan base is like some bastion of racial progression. They're not. But they don't give a damn about Eric Reed. right? Like, they don't know who Eric Reed is. Eric Reed, before this, could have walked down the streets of Charlotte and no one would have known who he was. They wouldn't have. Like, this was never going to be a guy that was polarizing in that way. Now, maybe other teams were afraid that he was going to wind up being polarizing, but it wasn't going to be that. He's just not, he ain't a big enough name in order to pull that off, and he was not out front on this in the way that Colin was. Because you think about the fact that he and Colin were on the same team. While all that was going on, how many times did you see Eric Reed on television?
Well, Eric was right next to Colin. He was the first one that kneeled with him.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but like after games and stuff, dude, them reporters wasn't going to go talk to two people about this, right? They're like, yo, we're going to talk to Rabble Rouser number one. Cool, we got what we need for Rabble Rouser number one. We will keep it going. Nobody went to Eric Reed. I also think that part of it was that Eric Reed was a little bit harder to like throw shots at. He was, relative to his position, a better player, and he never wore a shirt with Castro on it, right? He never had to pick socks. Like, all those things that you could use to kind of try to discredit Colin, you couldn't really do that with Eric. It wasn't there. Like, it was not in that place. But it wasn't going to be a thing, right? And I've always felt that the things surrounding all these things has just been like, yo, man, this wasn't going to be that big a deal. Once again, I saw people get over Michael Vick fighting dogs. Like, I seen it. It happened. People let it ride. But I do want to take this opportunity to point out for you, though, like what Eric Reed is about and why it is that I could see someone being nervous or afraid of bringing Eric Reed in. Now, one thing Eric said in his first press availability with Charlotte was they asked him about the Players Coalition, and he said that he felt that the Players Coalition was a subversion. That basically the Players Coalition was the NFL co-opting this and turning it into something that worked for them. Now, I don't think he's wrong. You know, I've talked to a handful of guys that are part of that coalition. And they really believe that what they've done is they've gotten the NFL's money behind things that they find to be important. And so the other day I saw Malcolm Jenkins sent a tweet out, and he was talking about ending, I think it's cash bail, right? Ending cash bail. And he retweeted something from the Players Coalition on this matter. Now, see, that's something that the owners would get behind, right? The owners are down to put some money behind stuff like that because it doesn't really make no real mention of race or racism or anything as such. Now, that gives the owners a bit, I don't know if a cop-out's the right way to put it, but it allows the owners to stay kind of safe on these sorts of things. But I do believe that also contributes positively to causes that dudes like Kaepernick and Reed are behind. You know, so I don't ever want to be at a place where I dismiss what the Players Coalition is doing just because it's involved with the NFL. That being said, I understand exactly what Eric Reed is talking about when he says that it is a subversion, because it is not a revolutionary sort of thing. What Colin and Eric are talking about is far closer to being something that is revolutionary. And so when the NFL, the owners and the guys like that, they get out there and they start talking about, you know, the things with the Players Coalition, Gabe, you know, the language they like to use. We really want to do what we can to help these guys make change in their communities. You always know what they always talk about in their communities?
Oh, yeah.
The change, like the community that needs the change is not the black one on these matters.
Yeah, I mean, they talk about it as if it's a charity, correct?
Yes. Yes, exactly. But like on these matters, the complaints that people are making and the guys like Colin and Eric are talking about, they're not telling they're not trying to make change in black communities. They're trying to make change in white communities. They're trying to make change among white folks. Like, I look at myself, like I live in a black community now, but before this, I did not live in a black community. I would like the police to leave me alone in those places too. Right? Like, they just look at this as, hey, these things that are going on with black people. Let's find a way to change these things that are going on with black people. You know, we've got cops here, but we can have the cops and the black people talk to each other, and we can, you know, do something to maybe make things better for the black people and show the black people where the white people are coming from. Nah. Colin and Eric are looking at this like, yo, man, y'all been treating us bad, and that needs to stop. And the language of what they say is totally different. If you don't believe me when I say the language is different, this is what Eric Reed had to say at his press availability.
I'll put it this way.
Yeah.
Next year will be 2019. It'll mark 400 years since the first slaves touched the soil in this country. That's 400 years of systemic oppression. That's slavery, Jim Crow, new Jim Crow, mass incarceration. You name it, the Great Depression. They come out with the New Deal. Black people didn't have access to those government stimulus packages. The New Deal set up what is known as the modern day middle class. We didn't have access to those programs, the GI Bill, Social Security, home loans, none of that. So this has been happening since my people have gotten here.
You notice that that is different than we want to help you guys make some change in your communities, right? Like, the tone, the verbiage is totally different. And that is why these cats move the owners in a different way. They are saying something that is substantively different. Perhaps it is leading toward the same cause, but that is absolutely substantively different. And there ain't no back down in that. Like, I mean, he was out there dropping heaters at every turn in that press conference, and not even like dropping heaters, like screaming at people or anything like that. It's in that calm, level tone. And guess what? Everything he said there was, how the kids say it? Facts. It was facts. It was all facts. Every single bit of it was facts. And so what I feel like is going on with Eric and Colin is more like, yo, you're going to need to face what it is that's going on here. Right. Not just simply we need to fix some things or tweak some things. But first, y'all need to face what this is. The protest with the anthem, for example, part of why I think that they hit people in such a way, the people who oppose them, is it requires you to face some things. It requires you to ask the question about what the American flag stands for. It requires you to ask the question about, like, what the American flag means to black people. Right. It requires all those things. And that's what makes these cats just a little bit different. And it's why I look at it and say every argument about the NFL just cares about ratings. You might be able to make that argument with Colin, right? Colin's become a flashpoint in a different way. You might be able to make the argument to Colin messing the game up. You can't do it with Eric Reed. Eric Reed walked down the street in New York right now, man. You might only know him if he got that I'm with Cap t-shirt on. Oh, by the way, Gabe, did you notice that he wore the I'm with Cap t-shirt at his press availability?
Inject that right in my veins. I was loving that.
That was pretty gangster. And he said, they asked me he's going to give up his collusion lawsuit. He said, no, I'm not giving up my collusion law. No, I'm not doing that. My case is not changing, right? Like, he is still pushing through with what it is that he's doing. He's going to go into that locker room being the guy who he is. And guess what? The world is not going to explode. It's not going to happen. I believe if a team signed Colin Kaepernick, there might be some things a little early that would be awkward, but the world would not explode. And the fact that I feel like adding these guys means that the world's not going to explode, and you're going to see it with Eric Reed, that the world's not going to explode, it's then going to force you guys to ask questions. Why do you really think it is that teams didn't seem to want to sign them? You think, oh man, all the owners want to do is win? Maybe they want some things even more. All right, Jimbo Fisher coaches at Texas A&M, and I, you know, don't know how much you guys know about Texas A&M, but I'm telling you right now, I don't know if there's been a program in America that's been waiting longer for a dude named Jimbo to come take over. It's on brand. Jimbo there, they had a game this weekend against Arkansas, Texas A&M and Arkansas at Jerry World. And that is the Jerry Bowl, if there is any Jerry Bowl. But anyway, had the game. Jimbo's things got a little rowdy on the field. Player was getting into it with somebody. Jimbo grabbed a player by the face mask, snatched him, pushed him away. Okay. Bad look. Bad look. This is not like the most uncommon thing in football. Like, throughout time, we have seen this. But still, bad look. You don't have to do that. And you need to recognize, I don't care if you're the coach or not, that'll get you punched in the face. And you can make the argument, hey, man, you can't punch the coach in the face. I agree. You can't punch the coach in the face. But I also recognize that somebody that's already a little bit rowdy, that ain't the way that you break it up. That's not how that goes. Like, Gabe, I don't know, how much fight breaking up experience do you have?
I have little, but I have seen enough to know that the last thing you want to do is get in the middle of something and then catch a heater.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. First things first, if your experience in breaking up fights is minimal, keep it that way. like they're nothing more overrated than breaking up fights. But in my experience of having to do something to stop somebody from doing, your move needs to be to try to catch them. If you're behind them, the wrap around, like, you get them at the arms right at the elbow joint, you know? Like, you don't, like, you can even be gentle with it, right? But it's just a wrap around and turn. That's your best bet. Because then if they want to break free from you, you can let them go and you can keep it safe, right? Or if you decide you really want to struggle with it, you can keep the pull, keep the turn, or whatever it is. But what you're not going to do is yank somebody.
Now, I have a serious question for you.
Yes.
What is the difference between that and the guy that loves to do the hold me back, the NBA sideline guy,
yes.
You know, after every big dunk, it's like, whoa, 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 everybody stand back a little bit.
Because
it's the same type of person, right? It's like, oh, no, I got to get in there and break it up.
Yeah, no, but sometimes you got to break it up, right? Like sometimes you know who the person is that you're dealing with. And somebody's got to break this up. Because let me tell you, like the last time I had to break up a fight, I was like, oh, no, I really don't want to do this. Because I have no interest in fighting you or the other person, right? I'm out of that game. And so you just got to get their arm around them and get them around. And see, and the thing with Jimbo was he really could have got himself cracked. And yeah, everybody would have killed the player for it. But I don't think that's an unfair reaction to somebody snatching you by the face mask. Especially like in, if Jimbo could say the emotions are why he grabbed the face mask, ain't nobody saying that the emotions would have justified cracking him, right? But it's got to be, what can you say at that point?
Doesn't that sound like somebody who knows that he did something wrong, right?
Yes.
It's like, oh, I got caught up in my emotions.
Yep.
It's like, oh, yeah, I got caught up in my emotions when I hit that person.
Yes.
Or I got caught up in my emotions when I, you know, flipped off the sideline.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I get it now. So you are recognizing that you did something wrong there.
Well, my thing also is like, hey, I just got caught up in my emotions is not a justifiable excuse for anything. We know that, right? Like you're not telling me something I couldn't obviously tell. The problem is that you got caught up in your emotions. Like that's what we're getting on you for is the fact that you did it. But what got me about this is, and I'm not, like, Jimbo was wrong for it, but it's not like the end of the world wrong. It's not like it's fireable offense wrong. It was just wrong. But what kills me is all the people sitting at home on the sidelines saying how there's nothing wrong with that and it's just football and that the kid should have been okay with that. Meanwhile, you have all these actual real live football players, right? Professionals who are saying no one's ever treated me like that. I would not tolerate anybody treat me like that. Chris Long, right? Chris Long is the son of a Hall of Famer. Chris Long has a brother that's made Pro Bowls. Chris Long has been to 2 Super Bowls. Nobody's out here calling Chris Long soft. Chris Long is saying, yo, that's inappropriate behavior. And you still got people sitting around on their lunch breaks eating a ham and cheese sandwich telling these cats that it's soft. What? Like, really, what are you talking about? In that context, and that blows my mind about this, is just the fact that people have no respect for the humanity of these guys, especially college football players. Because think about this. You've probably seen college coaches snatch guys by the face mask. When's the last time you saw an NFL coach snatch a dude by the face mask? It ain't happening. You can't treat grown men like that. But the thing about college football players is, my man Rod, the black guy who tips, he made this point many years ago, and that was one of the realest things anybody ever said to me. He's like, yeah, they just kids when it's time to pay them. They just kids when it's time to treat them bad, but let them get in trouble and all of a sudden they become adults. Right? Like that's saying, you know, that's how that goes. Jimbo Fisher would not treat a grown man like that. Jimbo Fisher would not grab one of his coaches like that. It wouldn't happen because that's not the way you treat grown-ups. That's not the way you treat people you respect. Right? Now, also, don't forget that, you know, there's an allegation from a former player who got himself into his own problems, but there's an allegation from a former player that when Jimbo got there about the disrespectful manner in which he was treating players, and it just kind of felt like they were trying to run him off and stuff like that. Yo, that's not appropriate. It's not cool. And I will never sit here and tell you it's okay to talk to or treat somebody in a way that I personally would not ever want to be talked to or want to be treated. And I need you guys to peep game on the way that you're responding to this, because the attitudes that you have is saying these guys got to stop being soft is what contributes to stuff like what's going on at Maryland. That stuff at Maryland, like the Washington Post just put out a story, and it was damning, the things that were there and the impressions that people had. One woman was talking about her son's playing there, and she said that it was so bad that she jumped in her car, drove down there, picked her boys up, and they left. Right? Like it was a little league practice. They're like, nah, this is about to stop. Woman said that he was a narcissist who thinks he's more powerful than God. Right? But what was clear from that Washington Post story, though, was that there were a lot of players who thought it was okay, who didn't have a problem with it. And in fact, one thing that Durkin at Maryland has set up, I don't know if you saw this game, he said at Champions Club. And so those who were high achievers got to go to the Champions Club and they got all kinds of perks, and the other guys got treated mad disrespectfully. Did you see that?
Sounds like some tech startup or some sales company.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh, yeah, if you're in the inner circle,
yes,
you get to go on the trip to Cabo.
Yes.
But the rest of y'all, you got to work through Christmas.
Yes. Well, here's my question, man. What the hell you mean the Champions Club? Y'all play for Maryland. Y'all ain't the champions of nothing.
We gotta ask Dominique about that.
I do need to ask him about that. But y'all ain't you can't be a champion within like a 4-8 team. It's not possible. That's not how this works. But you had players that were like, nah, this is just tough coaching or whatever it is. And it's like, there are always going to be guys who say that it's okay. There are always going to be guys who have been conditioned to believe that that sort of behavior is appropriate. And there are always going to be guys who convince themselves that they can handle it because they're tougher. But in the end, the level of tolerance that you should or shouldn't have for that stuff is not about whether or not you can handle it. Like, that's an insufficient standard. Like, I can handle somebody calling me all kinds. So this, I'm not saying that these are the exact same thing, but you'll understand the point that I'm making. If someone wanted to call me the N-word, I can handle it, right? Like, people call me down on the internet not infrequently. I can handle it. It's not going to break me down. It's not going to make me cry. Like, I look often on the internet where people be like, yo, you know, tell the story about the first time somebody called you the N-word, and people can remember it clearly, how old they were, where they were, everything else. And I'm sitting there like, nah, I don't really remember. It wasn't that noteworthy an occasion. It also wasn't necessarily that rare. I'm from Texas, right? But I don't mean you get to do that, right? Like, that don't mean I wouldn't be in within my rights to jam you up for that. Just like, it doesn't matter if I can handle it, right? It doesn't matter if I can take it. You shouldn't do that. And that's the thing with Jimbo, and that's the thing with all the stuff that's going on at Maryland, is that there needs to be an absolute standard of, you should not do this. If Durkin was doing this and they went 12-1, he should not do this. If Fisher does this and then suddenly the team turns around and they become an SEC world beater, you should not do that. And I just don't get why it is that people have such a minimal amount of respect for college football players. They are, in our athletic sphere that we talk about on this network and in surrounding places, they are the most vulnerable of anyone. They have the least power. They have the least backup. They have no means of really standing up for themselves. And then here we are standing out there telling them about how they should take more. No, at every turn, if you claim to care about this stuff, at every turn, you should have some measure of concern for how is it that the players are being treated, because you know what the dynamics are and you know what the dynamics could potentially lead to for them. At every turn, we should be asking that question. Like, I think the treatment of college football players is legitimately a civil rights matter. I don't mean like on some we shall overcome type stuff. I mean, we are dealing with guys who do not get paid. We are dealing with guys who are not in a position organized. We're dealing with guys who are basically in effect on one-year contracts every year. They are walking the tightrope all the time, every year. They get told to go here. They get told to do this. They are ostensibly paid with an education, but how much learning are you supposed to do when you don't go to no Friday classes on the days of road games? What you supposed to do if you got a test on the day of that Friday class or whatever it is, right? They are not treated well. They may be well-dressed. They may have nice shoes. They may meet a lot of girls, but they're not treated well. The dynamic does not truly allow for most of them to be treated well. Like, maybe if you're a star, but the power dynamics are so messed up that that's not going to be the thing that works. And at every turn, man, y'all come out here and ride for the people that stomp on them. And the only conclusion I can draw from that is that y'all want them to get stomped on. You should be ashamed of yourself for it. We'll be right back with If You Haven't Heard, but first, guys, you ever had a made-to-measure suit? It's so much better to have a suit that's made for your body, and Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from, and the option to personalize the details, like your lapel, the lining, the pockets, the buttons, even your own monogram. I got a shirt from Indochino. I love how it fits and how it looks. And here's how they do it. You'll visit a stylist at our showroom or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your design, customization, submit your measurements with your clothes. Then relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. And this week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Bomani at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. That's Indochino.com, promo code Bomani for any premium soup for just $359 and free shipping. That's right, shipping is free. It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino are also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant, pairing as easily with the suit jacket as they do with the sweater, and they'll be good any time of year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Indochinos at an introductory price of $79 U.S.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Vamani, this first story of the day comes from transportation.
I'm Mike Laris, and I cover transportation for the Washington Post. Minivans have been around since 1983. When they were first introduced by Chrysler, they had faux wood panels on the outside and three rows of seats inside. Of course, all the cup holders. Today, boosters say minivans make for the perfect self-driving car. Basically, they're big, they can carry a lot of people, and they're good for delivering stuff. One of the big driverless firms, Waymo, said earlier this year that it would buy up to 62,000 Chrysler Pacifica minivans for its driverless service. That's supposed to start later this year in Arizona. Transportation planners I talk to like the idea of the self-driving minivan. They say they can cut traffic and pollution by getting fewer people to drive by themselves. And it's got a safe, family-friendly image. It's not the kind of vehicle you'd imagine would run someone over. That unfortunately happened this year when a pedestrian was killed by one of Uber's self-driving SUVs. But I also heard from skeptics, people who question whether the technology will ever be safe enough, and those who doubt there will ever be enough drivers willing to hand over their keys to robots to make much of a difference.
Gabe, they say they don't think the minivan seems like the kind of vehicle that'll run over people. Why not?
I don't know the difference between, you know, getting run over by a minivan versus getting run over by an SUV.
Right.
That's still basically some big cars.
I feel like the SUV is worse. The minivan is worse. Look, man, minivans are like school buses. They are designed to win wrecks. Like, job one for a minivan is win the wreck. That's what it is there for. Oh, you! I have to carry my children around in this. You better win a wreck, right? It doesn't matter what the horsepower is and none of that. Nah, man, you better get out here and you better win a wreck. That's what it is. I tell you what, might get some of that minivan, that traffic off the road. Them self driving minivans. Let me tell you, if they put more minivans out there, gonna be a lot more college students out there, bad boy. We can roll eight deep. Let's all get the minivan. I ain't gonna be in a tearing that bad boy up. My homeboy had a Nissan Quest minivan on 17s when I was in college. And like, I had never thought of the idea of the minivan being like a cool car until we all got to load up in there and we all had space to stretch out our legs. Woo, boy. Minivan was crunk in that regard. Then you get to a certain age where you don't want to hang out with that many of your friends at one time, and the minivan is lame unless you have children. In which case, it's also lame, but we understand because you have children.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like, the cool factor there when you're like getting driven around in an Uber, it's not like, oh yeah, this is my car. So it's not like you're affected in the same way. We're like, oh man, you just pulled up in a minivan. It's like, oh well, I'm just getting dropped off. It's like I'm taking the bus.
Yes, yeah. That, I guess that's what it is. Is they gonna be like Uber Black for the minivan, like the fly minivan? Uber Black is the biggest con in the world, by the way. I did Uber Black one time. Uber Black is charging you like twice the price. Just to look like you took a fancier car than you did. It ain't like the Uber Black driver is treating you like a driver does. No, he just driving the same car. He ain't got no bottle of water back there ready for you.
And then when you go to maybe a place where there's a little bit more money, a little bit more affluence, some of the cars you might be taking might be just as nice as one of the Uber Black cars. I mean, I was down with my wife in Miami a couple of months back, just taking regular Uber, you know, Uber Pool even. And a dude picked us up in like a fly Mercedes.
Yes.
I was like, all right, this is the nicest car that I might have ever been in.
Well, that also tells you about all the poor spending habits of Miami. Like, yo, if you got that Mercedes, you shouldn't be out here driving Uber because you're not doing it for fun. You're doing it to help pay this note. Like, I would look down at Miami and be like, is that an E-Class?
Is it going to get him extra tips? That's what I'm wondering.
Not a one. It's not going to get him a single one. But yeah, okay. So the minivan might be the future of transportation. In the end, man, cars are cool and people are always going to want cool cars. You're not going to be able to change that. So it might be a lot more of them out there, but they're going to have to start making them a little more fly if they really want them to catch on.
This next story is from Tech.
My name is Jessica Gwynn. I'm a senior technology writer with USA Today. You could expect to hear more details this week from Facebook on its largest hack ever. The social media giant disclosed Friday that nearly 50 million users had their personal accounts compromised and 40 million more had their accounts exposed. As a result, all of those Facebook users were forced to log out of their accounts last week. Facebook still won't tell USA Today when it plans to notify the 50 million users whose data was breached. And the size of this massive hack, how many people were affected, how much of their information was stolen, is still not known. And we still also don't know who did it. But security researchers suspect the data breach affected even more people than Facebook estimated. What we do know, the unidentified attackers at the very least gained access to basic demographic information like gender, hometown, name, or birthday. You know, all the information many of us include in our Facebook profile. We also know that Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and Chief Operating Officer Sheryl Sandberg's accounts were breached too. Facebook's had a lot of trouble this year. The spread of disinformation, the swiping of people's personal information by Cambridge Analytica, state-sponsored election interference, and in the U.S. and in the European Union, politicians and regulators are demanding investigations and answers.
You telling me they can't even protect Zuckerberg's account?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't tried to add Zuckerberg. I didn't know if it was like, were you ever a MySpace guy?
Yeah, briefly.
Okay, so were you everybody who's friends with Tom? That's your first friend, right?
Yes.
And Tom was like the starter of MySpace. I haven't tried to add Zuckerberg on Facebook before, so I don't know if his information is, you know, readily available like that.
Yo, but the fact that not even Zuckerberg is safe. Like, I would figure that y'all would have him in like his account in some kind of cauldron or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, why are we there? Why are we there? Like, all of these things, I really look at. I'm like, yo, why are we here? Because I saw about this one, and I'm like, yo, man, I think I'm going to just take my account down. I'm not on there anymore anyway. You know, like, no, man, this is so wild that Facebook caught on in such a way that everybody ran all their stuff around Facebook, and it feels so terribly unsafe. We got a problem, man. We got a problem in what this is. And Zuckerberg don't never have the right answers. And what's also happening with Zuckerberg, too. Ain't but so long that Zuckerberg can keep skating on this, I'm just a young kid, like, you know, da-da-da, all this stuff. Zuckerberg went to college with Pablo, man. Zuckerberg in his mid-30s. You know, like, this is a grown-up now who runs a super large corporation. And also, should be noted, not doing politics on you. But did you see during the Kavanaugh hearings, Gabe, that a Facebook's executive was sitting right behind Kavanaugh?
Oh, boy. Yeah. I did not catch that.
Yeah, there was one sitting behind Kavanaugh, and I think that, like, Kavanaugh's lawyer has also done some work for Facebook. Like, Facebook is getting themselves caught up in all the wrong news. All the wrong news. But the reason I point that out is not to be like, ooh, bad conservative or anything like that. But I do think, to a degree, with some people, that Zuckerberg has skated on this idea that he's, like, this young liberal. You know, who isn't really like the rest of the ruling capitalist class. He just wants to make the world a better place. Nah, man. Zuckerberg is out here on this big business like you would expect from someone who runs a big business. You need to start running your big business right.
And I bet he was running around on like a Facebook Platinum or a Facebook Clear. That way he could be, have all of his account information safe, huh?
Yeah, or they are also, I imagine, they also probably lying. Like, yeah, our accounts got hacked too. Ha ha ha. They got things on a whole nother server.
That's probably a dummy account.
Yes, yes, yes. The Mark Zuckerberg account. Like, are there any real pictures of your kids over there?
Yeah, it's like a picture of him from very far away.
Yes.
That was like pulled from like a press briefing or something like that.
Yes.
All right, Bomani, this last story comes from business.
Hi, this is David Gellis with the New York Times. So it looks like Elon Musk has put his troubles behind him, at least for the time being. On Saturday, he settled with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which had just sued him. Under the terms of the deal, Musk agreed to step down as the chairman of Tesla and pay a fine. The settlement stems from a tweet that Musk sent on August 7th when he said he was considering taking Tesla, the electric car company he runs, private. That tweet sent Tesla's stock soaring, caught Musk's board caught off guard and drew an inquiry from securities regulators. Then last week, Musk and the SEC were close to a settlement, but at the last minute, he walked away from the table. That prompted the SEC to sue Musk personally on Thursday, seeking to bar him from serving as a director or executive of a public company. But the prospect of a drawn-out lawsuit spooked Musk, and he reopened negotiations with the SEC, finally striking a deal on Saturday. As part of the settlement, Musk agreed to have his communications monitored by the board, but so far, it doesn't seem like he's changed his style. Just hours after he settled with the SEC at 1:08 a.m. on Sunday morning, he sent out a company-wide email imploring people to work hard, even though it was the weekend. "One more day of going super hardcore and victory is ours," he wrote. "If we go all out tomorrow, Sunday, we will achieve an epic victory beyond all expectations. We'll see what comes next for Tesla."
You know, Gabe, it wasn't that long ago that we thought this guy was smart. You remember that?
Yeah, I mean, NASA is still backing him with SpaceX through all of this, so I guess there's still some sort of scientific smartness, but I wonder if, like, the business smartness is waning here.
Well, and I can't assume that NASA doing that is because he's smart.
Yeah.
I don't know what these clowns are doing, man. Like, I have no idea. But this dude, didn't he get himself in trouble, too, like, pretending like he was smoking weed on TV?
Yeah, we talked about that a couple of weeks ago on the Joe Rogan podcast.
Yeah, like, I kind of feel like he's almost like the Kanye West of this stuff. Like, what are you doing? Like, everybody around you is just looking at you like, man, what in the world are you, why did you say? Yo, you know people can hear you, right?
I haven't been following Elon Musk's career long enough to know what he was like at the beginning, but it kind of seems like he's one of the, I mean, he's doing a Kanye right now, to your point. He's, like, gotten big enough to the point where he thinks he can do whatever he wants.
Yep.
And he's like coming out with the album that, you know, is really what he wants to do and not necessarily what the people want or his fans want, at least.
And we like sit down.
Yeah,
sit,
come on, man.
Sit down and be quiet.
I guess this might be the end of Elon Musk's, you know, long run on If You Haven't Heard.
Nah, he'll do something else. Just you wait, because somebody else will be stupid enough to give him some money to do it. All right, we'll be back to talk about some music in just a second. But first, these days you can get practically everything on demand. Like the right time. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. But did you know you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk when it's convenient for you. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package using your own printer. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. With how easy it is, I really don't get why everyone doesn't do it already. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale so you can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage. Here at the right time when we need to send you your Unblock Me Bow t-shirts, Gabe doesn't even have to leave the house to get you squared away using Stamps.com. You can do the same. Right now, use code BOMANI for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BOMANI. That's Stamps.com. Enter BOMANI. All right, ladies and gentlemen, September 29th was a very important day, September 29th, 2018, because it took us back to September 29th, 1998, a day I'm sure that Gabe does not remember, but it was a very important day in my own upbringing. So here's what happened on September 29th, 1998. The following albums came out. Jay-Z's Volume 2, Hard Knock Life came out. Tribe Called Quest, Love Movement, which we knew was their last album, that came out. We got a Brand Nubian album with Grand Poobah for the first time since 1991 when One for All came out. We got Black Star, most definitely Kweli or Black Star. We got that album. That came out. And we got Outkast Quemini all on the same day. Like, I remember I was in college, man, and I went to college with a bunch of dudes from, like, New York. You know, I got places all over the place, right? And so that was at the time where hip hop was far more regional and people really held it down for the music where they were from. And so we was in line at the record store and the New York cats are coming to get the Jay-Z, right? the particular type of like backpacker types going in there to get the tribe and the brand newbie and that stuff like that. But I remember, now granted, I was in Atlanta, so it was a little different, but it felt like everybody was coming to get the Outkast because the source had already told us that the Outkast was a 5-mic album. And some of us had heard a little bit of it before because I know in the radio station in Atlanta, they just sat and they decided to play the whole thing. And we rode around as long as we could, just listen to as many of the songs as we possibly could when that record came out. And I don't think I've ever had a higher level of expectation for an album, and somehow that record managed to connect with it in every way. So, like, I feel like I've written this somewhere before. I can't remember where I wrote it, but I can tell you, like, this is my read on what Aquemini is. So, the first Outkast record, Southern Playlist of Cadillac Music, is a couple of friends in high school just kind of wilding out. The second one is AT Aliens, where they find out they thought they were going to be rich and famous, and now all they are actually is famous, and famous isn't nearly as much fun as they thought it would be. Like, you go through and check the themes on AT Aliens, it really is a whole lot of like, yo, we're here now, and I thought it was going to be a little bit different. And, oh, real life is coming because these dudes are like 19 years old at this point. You know, so some of the difficulties that come from growing up, they popping up in those moments. People dying, you know, your money not being right, all that stuff. So that comes. Then we get to Aquemini. And so with AT Aliens, it was clear, like, I don't want to say that there was a split between the two of them at that point, but Andre was going in a direction that was not quite the same direction that Big Boy was going in. They weren't becoming people, like, it wasn't incompatible or incongruous, but the directions they were going in were a little different, which is something I feel like a lot of us can relate to about our relationships with our friends from high school, right? You go in different places, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, like, you lose each other. So, like, my best friend from growing up, man, I've been cool with this dude since I was 7 years old. We are two completely different people, right? We have things that we're both into. We have things somewhat in common, but we are totally different people. And I almost feel like if we were to put out an album, like if we was rappers or something like that, in 2000, to a degree, it would probably sound like the split that these two dudes have. But, like, the bond we got is unbreakable. What we are is unbreakable. I call him right now. I ain't talked to him in a few weeks. Call him right now, man. We talk for 3 hours. Like, the reason I don't talk to him more is because I don't have 3 hours a day to talk to people. You know, like, that's what it is. And so, like, I can go back and I can listen to Aquemini and you can hear what it is, man. They are holding on to the friendship while they are becoming different people, right? While they're growing in these different directions. And it becomes such a fascinating juxtaposition. And then the beats go hard. And then it's all good and Southern in all the ways that Southern music is fantastic. I mean, it is a legitimately exciting record. It's a legitimately deep record. It is a fun record. It is everything that you could really ask for a record to be. And it's got Liberation, which is 9 minutes of pure greatness. Everything about Liberation is incredible. Whole 9 minutes is just basically just layers upon layers upon layers of percussion. Like, you listen to a Manny Fresh beat, all that stuff on the NPC, on the drum machine, right? Everything you can tell, like, everything is something that gets pounded out. That's basically what Liberation is, just with using instruments, right? Like, it is the extension of the James Brown model, except it takes that everything is a drum thing and manages to get all the intensity out of it, but smooths it out in a way that it never would be for a James Brown song. And it ain't rap, and it don't matter that these cats ain't rapping. Doesn't matter what any of it is, right? Like, this was the one, man. One day, I remember we was in college, we were riding around, and we just listened on the radio, and they're like, all right, if you want to come to the Skew It on the Barbie video shoot, come down to the Tabernacle. I don't even remember if we went back to the house, right? I think I went back to the crib to tell the other partners, and then we rolled out. And I tell you, we sat in the Tabernacle for 3 hours, and all they did was shoot them performing the song 3 times. And every time was the greatest moment of my life. Like, I remember the first time they did it, they were like, okay, guys, Raekwon is not here. And so they recorded it with Andre did his first verse, and then Big Boy did his third. And then the second time they did it, Andre did his verse, and then there was a pyrotechnic, and boom, Raekwon is here. Oh, snap, Raekwon is here, man. And they lied to us, and they told us, don't worry, you'll be on camera no matter where you are. Man, we were sitting, like, all the way in the balcony to the side of the stage, and they're like, no, we're going to get a lot of good shots from up here. So we were throwing it up. We were doing everything. Man, I ain't in that damn video. I ain't have to tell me that. You know what I'm saying? They just wanted to be like, yo, get excited because you're having fun. That would have been cool. They straight lied to the folk about that. But, like, I have memories upon memories upon memories tied up with this record, including one of my homeboys. His name is Rick. He might be listening right now. Who told me in the year 2012, I hate Equimini. I've always hated Equimini. I'm like, what are you talking about? Gay man, I had to sit him down on the couch, put a little something in his hand, and play Equimini, and just sit there until he said at the end, what in the world was I talking about?
Yeah, a lot of people reject stuff or just flat out say that they don't like stuff that they've never actually listened to.
Yeah, but he said that to us about Equimini. Like, what are you talking about? This is the most ridiculous, preposterous thing. Like, that was an opinion I refused to allow to exist. Like, we were going to sit here until you decided that wasn't true anymore.
Right.
That was exactly what it was. We are going to sit here until you realize you out here tripping. Like, Quemini's the first time we heard Backbone say still bucking like five deuce for Trey. A line that Backbone has been kind of riding for the last 20 years. Don't blame him. If I came up with something that dope, I would probably be doing the exact same thing. Dude, there's a song on there about, yo, the world's about to end. Let's hurry up and make one more song. Just think about that, the intensity of that idea. If you really thought the apocalypse was coming and they're like, yo, hurry up and get to the studio. We got to record. For who, for what, I have no idea. But we got to record. It's all of that. And so the 20th anniversary comes around, and I don't really want to say this like to throw shade to nobody or anything like that. Like, I don't mean to do that. I do, however, think that it is worth noting, okay? Jay-Z's Hard Knock Life sold like 4 million copies in real time when it came out. Like, it was quadruple platinum at the time. I don't know how many copies it has sold overall. That record came out the same exact day. And that record had some like legit classic jams on it. I ain't heard nobody commemorate the 20th anniversary of it because it just ain't moved people like that. Outkast had back-to-back albums that came out the same day as Jay-Z records, and they were number two on the charts because they came out the same day as the Jay-Z records. Cass is moving people in a way that Jay just wasn't at that time, right? Just was not. So you think about that one for a second. I've seen people get real revisionist about how much they liked a bunch of records that people didn't really like that much back in the day. Like Nas, It Was Written is a great example. Like people go back and be like, no, man, I love that. It was actually great. And I think there's probably some people that do that with Hard Knock Life. But didn't nobody care that it came out 20 years ago on Saturday? You hear me? Nobody didn't. Because that is, was, and forever will be the day of Equimini. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to Stamps.com and thanks to Indochino. Also, thanks to the folks contributed to If You Haven't Heard. Thanks to Mike Laris of The Washington Post. Check out his story on minivans maybe being the future. Thanks to Jessica Gwynn of the USA Today. Check out her story about the big Facebook breach. And thank you to David Gettles of the New York Times. Check out his story on Elon Musk out here tripping. Again. All right. Don't forget, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. If you only give us 4 stars, I am inclined to think that you are a hater. And we'll be back to talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.